Okay, so if you remember again, last week we began speaking about, in the beginning of Parak Shira, the Shamayim, the heavens. So remember again, quick review. So we saw that the Shamayim quote the Pasuk from Tehillim, HaMashayim Misaprim Kivot Kel, U'maaseh Yodav Magid Harakia. The heavens recite the glory of God, the sky tells of the work of His hands. So what we really focused on in our last class was a focus on the notion of Rakia Shamayim. Remember again, because the Pasuk itself, even though in Perek Shira, the creation is referred to as Shamayim, but nevertheless, the Pasuk that's being referenced make reference to Shamayim and Rakia. From last week, from last class, what did we learn? What's the difference between Rakia and Shamayim? What would you say? It's the same. So why two different words? One is descriptive, excellent, and one ultimately, again, is the name. So as we saw, again, based on the Psukim, the Rakia seems to be the descriptive name, the divider, the sky divider, versus the Shamayim, which is the formal name. But what we saw was that the essence of the Shamayim was to do what? I'll give you a hint, it's a Pasuk in Chumash. I'll give you another hint, we learned it last week, to do what? Yeah, you said it. I'm sorry? What is the role of the Shamayim?
Divide.
Excellent. Divide. Girls, 95% of your grade is just your attentiveness and class participation. I just want to know that you're engaged and that you're learning. That's all. Good. Excellent. So the role of the Shamayim ultimately is to divide. There's Mayim Alyonim, Mayim Tachtonim. There's upper waters, there's lower waters. Lower waters, we understand, what does that refer to? The oceans, the seas, the waters that we have here in this earth versus the upper waters, again, some type of celestial water that exists, some type of waters that reside with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We then saw the incredibly beautiful Svas Emes, right, in number 5, if you remember again on your sheet. So remember again, after HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the Shamayim, the Rakia, and the upper waters are divided from the lower waters, what was the response of the lower waters? They were upset. They lamented the fact that before the creation of the Shamayim of the Rakia, they too were close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but now with the creation of the Shamayim, ultimately they are distanced. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Nechama, God's consolation to the Mayim Tachtonim was? Good, excellent. Two things. I'll call Karbancha Bris Melach, right? Kol Karbancha Takriv Melach. The Bris Melach, the covenant of salt, which tells us that every single carbon requires salt. Salt comes from? Water. Good. Number 2, the second part of the Nechama was? Nisuch HaMayim. Excellent. Specific carbon comprised just of water that was offered uniquely on Sukkis, water libation, water being poured on the Mizbeach. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu essentially says to the Mayim Tachtonim, as much as you are separate, you are not separated. So you are separate, you are a distinct entity, but you are not separated from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There will still be the opportunity for you to somehow find your way back to me, ultimately through sacrificial service, through salt, through water, the Mayim Tachtonim comes back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now I want to show you something amazing. And now we begin to understand, remember, let's just keep in mind what we're trying to do. We already established in our past classes that when the pieces of nature speak out, they speak about their own greatness, but ultimately, again, from their greatness, what do we learn? Hashem's greatness and our greatness. Remember, again, keep this in mind. We're not there yet, but that's what we're working towards. We understand the greatness of the Shamayim. Shamayim Omrim, Shamayim Misapim Kivot Kel, Masiyot Magidir Akiyah. So again, we're going to try to figure out the greatness of the heavens through the greatness of the heavens in this particular context, appreciate our personal greatness. I want to show you something amazing. Take a look at number 6. There's a pasuk, and the pasuk says, "Al naros bavel sham yashavnu gam bachinu b'zachrinu esiyom." Actually, a very, very moving capital in Tehillim, where the capital makes reference to the exile of Klal Yisrael in the aftermath of the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash. And the pasuk paints a picture. You're going to see it's an incredibly moving picture. "Al naros bavel, by the rivers of Bavel, we sat. Gambachinu, we cried, Bizachreinu es Tzion. We remembered Tzion, remembered Yushalayim, we remembered Eretz Yisrael, we remembered Tzion." And again, this is the image of Klal Yisrael being led out of Eretz Yisrael, ultimately to exile in Bavel. And the Medrash in Eicher Rabbah paints an incredible picture. Take a look at number 7. Now this medrash is actually part of a much larger medrash in Eicha Rabbah. The beginning of Eicha Rabbah discusses the reaction of the Avos and the Maos to the Churban. And it's a dramatic medrash. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, everyone has their own reaction to the Churban. But here the medrash describes the following. Baos HaShah, so just to go back, to give you a little bit of context, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yirmiyahu HaNavi, go and tell Moshe Rabbeinu what I did. Apparently, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not inform any of the tzaddikim or the tzidkanios of yesteryear, right, about what he was going to do with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. What, just not our topic, but as an aside, why do you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately, again, would not have told the Avos, the Imos, Moshe, everyone else, what he was going to do? Because we're down for Bnei Yisrael. Kadosh Baruch Hu knew that he had to do something. And he did not want anyone intervening on behalf of Klal Yisrael. And as such, it's like information blackout. Information blackout. The Medrash itself is startling when you see the shock of the Avos and the Maos about what happened. He tells Yirmiyahu HaNavi, go tell Moshe. Remember, I just want to point out, the Beis HaMikdash has already been destroyed. Klal Yisrael is always already being led out. Moshe Rabbeinu does not know what has occurred. He says, God says to Yirmiyahu HaNavi, go tell Moshe what I've done. Moshe, so Yirmiyahu goes, it's amazing. He goes to the desert, right, Moshe, because remember again, the kever of Moshe Rabbeinu is unknown, apparently even to Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Yirmiyahu HaNavi stands by the banks of the Yarden. He calls out, Ben Amram, son of Amram, son of Amram, I have something to tell you. Moshe Rabbeinu rises up from the grave. Yirmiyahu tells him what happened. Moshe Rabbeinu says the following. That's where this medrash picks up. Number 7. Ba'os HaShah, Amar Moshe the Yirmiyahu. In that moment, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Yirmiyahu, Lech Lefonai, She'elech Ve'avim Ve'era Mimaniach Yadu Aleihem. So this is incredible. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he hears what's happened, he says to Yirmiyahu, listen, here's the deal. Take me to Klal Yisrael, because I'm going to bring them back home. Remember again, Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who extricates Klal Yisrael from crippling situations and delivers them to redemption. This was his job, right? This is what he did for Am Yisrael over and over and over again. So Moshe Rabbeinu is convinced that he can fix this situation. Bring me to Klal Yisrael. Let me see who the contemporary Paro is. Okay, now it's not Paro. It's going to be Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar, and whoever it is. Show me who it is. I'm going to rectify this situation and bring them back home. Yirmiyahu says to Moshe, and it's such a gripping medrash. He says, Moshe, I would take you, but I can't even take you on the pathway because the pathway itself is littered with corpses. It's littered with bodies. I can't take you. Moshe says, Yirmiyahu, take me. Just take me to find my people. Miad halach Moshe v'Yirmiyahu lefanav. Moshe v'nu comes being led by Yirmiyahu. Ad shegiu linaros bavel. Until they reached the rivers of Bavel. Now you have to appreciate what's happening by the rivers of Bavel. So apparently the image that's being painted over here is that Klal Yisrael is being led out. They're being led out in captivity. They're allowed to rest for a few moments by the Naros Bavel, by the banks of the river of Bavel, to drink, to restore themselves a little bit. So they're resting there for a few moments. What happens? Ra'uhu l'Moshe. They see Moshe Rabbeinu approaching in the distance. How they knew it was Moshe Rabbeinu, I don't know, but they knew it was Moshe. Va'amru zeh lazeh. They said to each other, Ba ben Amram mikivro liftoseinu miyad sareinu. Listen to this beautiful, beautiful moment. Klal Yisrael is filled with such incredible hope. Moshe Rabbeinu is back. Moshe Rabbeinu has come back from the grave. If Moshe Rabbeinu has come back from the grave, there's only one reason he came back, and that's why. That's why? To redeem us. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu does. What does Moshe Rabbeinu do except deliver Klal Yisrael from danger? That's what Moshe Rabbeinu does. Every single time we get into a terrible predicament, Moshe Rabbeinu is always there to save us, to provide salvation. So they see Moshe approaching in the distance and they say, oh, Moshe Rabbeinu has come back from the grave to redeem us. So what happens? Miyad, excuse me, Yotas Abaskova Amra Gezera hi nilafanai. In that moment, a baskol comes out from the heavens and says, it is a gzera that you are not going home. The gzera before HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, Klal Yisrael, you're not coming home. Moshe Rabbeinu is not here to save you. Moshe Rabbeinu cannot save you. You have to continue the journey into exile, into diaspora. Miad Amar La Moshe. This is incredible. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Klal Yisrael, Bonai, Lahachzir Eschem Yefshar. My beloved children, I cannot bring you home. I cannot bring you home. Shekvar Nigzira Gezira. Because the Gezira, the decree has already been sealed. Ella Hamakom Yachzir Eschem B'mehira. Moshe Rabbeinu gives them a bracha. What's the bracha? HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bring you home quickly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bring you home shortly. I can't bring you home. I can't turn this around. I can't change these circumstances. But I give you the bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bring you back home B'mehira. V'yaniach Osam. And he left them. He left them. Ba'osa shah heremu kolam bebichia gidola alcha alsa bichiyasam lamara. In that moment, Klal Yisrael cried an even more bitter cry than they had cried up until this moment. Why was Klal Yisrael crying a more bitter cry now? Why now? Because they lost hope. Remember again, you know, sometimes in life, when you face a difficult predicament, you cry. When there's a glimpse of hope that maybe the suffering is over, and then that glimpse of hope is extinguished, your pain is amplified multifold. So here, Klal Yisrael realized they saw the Beis HaMikdash burn. They saw the Beis HaMikdash destroyed. They saw Yerushalayim destroyed. They're being led out in shackles into captivity. But when they saw Moshe Rabbeinu, they were so convinced that the messenger of redemption and salvation was there. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who was able to stand up to anyone and to everyone. By the way, even to who? Even to who? Even to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Remember again, there were many times that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm going to destroy them. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, you're not. Moshe Rabbeinu Kiviyachol even stood up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Kiviyachol caused HaKadosh Baruch Hu to change his mind, whatever that means. Right? By the eagle we saw it, by the meraglim we saw it. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to save Klal Yisrael even from the gzera of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So they see Moshe Rabbeinu and they are convinced that everything is going to be okay. The baskol comes out, they realize that they are stuck. They realize that this is a gzera. And Moshe Rabbeinu, amazingly enough, doesn't even attempt to argue with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this moment. The Moshe Rabbeinu who never backed down from a confrontation, even with the Ribono Shel Olam Bichvoldo Ba'atzmo, even with God himself, realizes in this situation, there's nothing to talk about. In Al Mala Daber, there's nothing to talk about over here. This is the Gzera. He gives them a bracha, he leaves, and they cry. That cry, says the Medrash, is the cry of Al Naros Bavel, Sham Yashavnu Gam Bachinu Bizachrinu Eszion. The cry that the capital in Tehillim refers to is not simply the cry of destruction, not simply the cry of exile. It's the cry after losing any last vestige of hope. It's the cry after seeing Moshe Rabbeinu come back from the grave, only to tell us that he was powerless to do anything. When the great Moshe Rabbeinu says, I can't help you, Al Naros Bava Sham Yashavnu Gam Bachinu. We cried, and we cried so intensely because we realized that there was no hope. Now, I'll show you something amazing. Take a look at number 8. There's a Medrash called the Medrash Plio, right? The Medrash writes, now, what the Medrash picks up on is something very interesting. The Lashon of the Pasuk is Gam Bachinu. Gam Bachinu. Now, Gam Bachinu, how do we translate it? Also cried. So again, in the context of the Pasuk, how would you... It reads fine. Al Naros Bavel, right? We sat by the rivers of Bavel. Sham Yashavnu, we sat there. Gam Bachinu. So Gam Bachinu means what? Also, when we also cried? We sat and we cried. So Gam, we sat there and we cried. The Medrash writes something amazing. Gam Bachinu means, true means, we also cried. But we also cry could also mean what? Could also mean what? Something else is crying as well. We sat by the bank of the rivers. Something was crying, and we cried along with that something. What was crying, writes the Medrash? Bless you. Get ready for this. Number 8, Kam Bachinu. Bachinu im Hamayim. The water was crying, and we cried together with the water. Now let's take a step back for just a moment. Why would water be crying? Why would water be crying? Remember, which waters are these? Oh, excellent. So look what's unfolding over here. Al Naros Bavel. The waters are crying. The Mayim Tachtonim are crying. Why are the Mayim Tachtonim crying? Because the Mayim Tachtonim cried once upon a time ago, thousands of years before, during the very early days of creation. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Rakia, and that Rakia divided between Mayim Aliyon and Mayim Tachtonim. And the Mayim Tachtonim were crying also, it's not fair that we should be separated. And the Mayim Tachtonim were given the Chama, don't worry, don't worry. You're not cut off. There is the Melach, there is the Nisach HaMayim. You left plenty of time to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Beis HaMikdash has just been destroyed. Yerushalayim has just been made into a plowed field. Klal Yisrael sits by Naros Bavel, by the water. And what do they hear when they sit by the water? They hear the Mayim Tachtonim crying. Because the Mayim Tachtonim has just been cut off from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The lower waters have just been disconnected. The lower waters, the only way they connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is through the vehicle of Avodah, of sacrificial service of the Beis HaMikdash. And when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Mayim Tachtonim are cut off. Klal Yisrael hears the Mayim Tachtonim crying, and what happens? What's their reaction? They cry as well. Gam Bachinu. The waters cry, and we cried as well. Why does Klal Yisrael cry? Because like the waters, they feel that we too have been cut off. Mayim Tachtonim, you're crying because you have been cut off. We've also been cut off. Without a Beis HaMikdash, without Yerushalayim, without that address for national service, we too are cut off from you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So understand the enormity of the moment that the Kapitel on Tehillim is describing. Al Naros Bavel, Sham Yashavnu. When Klal Yisrael is sitting there, why do we sit by the banks of the water? Why are we sitting there? To catch our breath. Just to catch our breath. The collective wind has been knocked out of us. We're sitting there just to catch our breath. And as we sit there by the banks of the water, we can't help but be overwhelmed by the sounds of the crying of the waters. The Mayim Tachtonim are lamenting because they have been cut off from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when we hear the waters crying, Gam Bachinu, we cry as well, because we too have been cut off from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yes.
Why are the waters cut off?
Because remember, the only way the Mayim Tachtonim...
But why is it fair? They had a promise that they would be connected to Hashem.
Oh, it's a good question. Excellent. Meaning you're saying, what did the waters do wrong? So remember again, this gets into a much bigger discussion, which is the natural world reflects our state. If we're doing what's right, you know, let me rephrase this a little bit. Beginning of Parshas Bichukosai, right? The Torah says, "In Bichukosai tilechu, u'mitzvasai tishmoru." If you go ahead and you serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what does the Torah promise us? Right? Torah promises us. Remember, it's very interesting. In the beginning of Parshas Bichukosai, the Torah doesn't say, "If you do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of you, I'm going to give you so much kedusha, so much shefa, you're going to be so holy." What does it promise us? Rain, crops, livestock. So the Archaim HaKadosh says, but one second, what about the opinion that says Schar Mitzvah Bahai Al Maleka? What about there are opinions that say that there's no material reward for mitzvahs in this world. So how do you reconcile Schar Mitzvah Bahai Al Maleka with the fact that there's all this material blessing? So the Archaim HaKadosh gives two answers. He says, number one, this might not be reward, this might be enablers. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if you choose the right path in life, I'll give you the material blessing to enable you to continue down the right path. But the second possibility is, when the Jew does what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks, nature reacts in kind. The world is our mirror. So when Klal Yisrael does what we're supposed to do, nature is able to flourish as well. If we don't, then ultimately, again, nature is impacted as well. So you're right, the Ma'am Tachtonim didn't do anything. But if Klal Yisrael doesn't deserve a Beis HaMikdash, the rest of nature suffers as well.
So when Hashem gave the Ma'am Tachtonim the promise that they would be connected, it was dependent on Beis Yisrael, so why would they be happy with that?
I'll tell you even more than that. Forget about the waters. What does Rashi say? Right? Vayere vayvoker yom hashishi. What does Rashi say on that pasuk? Two opinions in Rashi. I'm sorry? I don't hear it. Say it again. Matan Torah. Right? Two different possibilities. Either hashishi, ultimately again, is a reference to the hay, is chamisha chumshei Torah, or shishi is a reference to Vav Nisan. It's not just the waters. Kadosh Baruch Hu says the entire natural world, your existence, is predicated on Klal Yisrael saying Nasa Venish, accepting the Torah on Vav Sivan. Your entire existence is predicated on Klal Yisrael's spiritual commitment. So the waters are one very small part of this. The entire natural world is dependent on us. Why would the natural world want this? What's the simple answer? Right, so first of all, they don't have a choice. Right, remember again, there's no bechira by the natural world. There's no bechira by the natural world. And the truth is that, as we just mentioned, the natural world does not have a value independent of us. And by the way, us doesn't just mean Klal Yisrael. Us means humanity. The natural world, that's why a lot of times, you know, it's important for us. You know, sometimes people think that being, you know, environmentally responsible is kind of like that's something that you know the nations of the world worry about. That's not us. No, even Jews have to be environmentally responsible. It's important. Why? Because it's our obligation to preserve the beautiful world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made for us as well. But sometimes there's a mistake of thinking that the world has a value independent of us. That's not true. That's why, by the way, that necessarily again we eat meat. If we love nature so much, if we care about nature so much, we should all be vegetarians. Right? It's a good shayla, leaving aside that Adam HaRishon was a vegetarian, right? Which is interesting to note that in the purest form of the world, man was not taking life. But again, we have a mitzvah to eat meat. Karbanos are meat. Mitzvah of Simchan Yom Tov is to eat meat. To teach us this lesson, nature is to be preserved and to be taken care of, but it's for us. So when Klal Yisrael messes up and the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, yes, the Mayim Tachtonim, it's not just Mayim Tachtonim. All of nature was messed up when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Eretz Yisrael as a land only thrives when? When Klal Yisrael is there doing what it's supposed to be doing. If Klal Yisrael is not there, Klal Yisrael doesn't do what they're supposed to do, the land itself suffers. The land itself closes up. So this incredible moment, Klal Yisrael sitting by the banks of the river, if you could imagine, if you were to listen carefully at that moment, you would hear two sets of cries. You would hear the cries of the Mayim Tachtonim, the cries of the earthly waters being cut off, and the cries of Klal Yisrael feeling that they were cut off as well. And in fact, if you take a look at number 9, in that same capital, what does Klal Yisrael say? The same capital of Al Naros Bavel, Eich Nashir Es Shir Hashem Al Admas Nechar. What does Klal Yisrael say? What does Klal Yisrael, what does that mean? Eich Nashir Es Shir Hashem Al Admas Nechar. What does that mean? I don't mean the translation of the words. You have the translation right there. How shall we sing the song of the Lord on foreign soil? What does it really mean? What is Klal Yisrael saying? How can we possibly be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu outside of Eretz Yisrael? Meaning, this pasuk asks the existential question. The Beis HaMikdash was not just simply a building. Right, we could build buildings anytime we want. We're good at building buildings. Right? Jews are good at real estate. We could do that. The Beis HaMikdash wasn't just simply a building. It represented the very command center, the very nerve center of Klal Yisrael's Ruchnius. It was literally, again, the address where heaven and earth met. It was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's domicile, his home, on this world. And when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed and we are exiled from our land, there's a simple question, existential question that we ponder. We won't survive this. We will not survive this. Eich nashir es shir Hashem al admas nechar. Is it possible to sing the song of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on foreign soil? Now, the truth is, you look at this pasuk and what do you think to yourself? Yes. Of course it is. What's the Shaila? We've been doing this for 2,000 years. And by the way, we've become pretty excellent at it. Right? We've been able to establish Torah centers and Bate Medrash and yeshivas and schools and everything, every aspect of spiritual infrastructure except for a Beis HaMikdash. We have again. So, but you have to understand something. Don't look at it now, 2,000 years of history. Look at it now when it was happening. For the first time in our national existence, since we came into Eretz Yisrael, under the leadership of Yoshua, Klal Yisrael is being exiled to a foreign land. The Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. Eretz Yisrael has been overrun. And so the Jew is thinking to him or herself, Eich nashir eshir Hashem ha'admas nechar. This must be the end of the road. This must be the end of the story. There's no future. There's no possibility. And remember again, what's reinforcing this thought? What's reinforcing this idea? The wailing, right? The cries of the waters. The waters are cut off. We're cut off. I guess it's the end of the road for everything ruchni in our lives. You have to understand, that's what was going through the minds of our ancestors thousands of years ago as they were being led out in chains from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. This must be the end of the road. Eich nashir es shir Hashem alad masnichar. And again, it's a rhetorical question because the obvious answer, of course, is no, right? It's a 50-50, right? Right. The obvious answer to this, meaning, think about this from their perspective, not from our perspective. If they were asking a rhetorical question, Eich nashir es shir Hashem alad masnichar, impossible. Impossible. I'm sorry?
Maybe we're thinking that we're serving Hashem, and if they were looking at us now, they're still having the same question.
No.
Maybe we're not serving Hashem, but we're not.
We're not. So no, remember, again, there are gradations. They're saying, well, in their mind, there was no form of Avodas Hashem that was possible al Admas Nechar. It couldn't happen. Are we serving like they used to serve? No.
But do I still agree with them? I think so. It's hard for us to serve Hashem al Admas Nechar. It's almost impossible.
I would vociferously disagree with that, right? I would tell you that I think we live in times where it is ridiculously easy to be Jewish. Ridiculously easy. I'll give you the proof to that. Let me tell you. No, good. This is. I appreciate the difference of opinion. I'll tell you why I think so. Let's just think about the times we live in. And girls, this is very important because Baruch Hashem, you're all very young, so you may not appreciate the historical continuum that you're living in. I don't remember, but I can tell you, you know, I'm a first generation American. My mother was born in the DP camps after the war. And my grandfather Zichron Levracha came to America. So my grandfather Zichron Levracha lost his job every Erev Shabbos because he would not work on Shabbos. He lost his job an immigrant lost his job every single Erev Shabbos because he would not work on Shabbos. Let me ask you this today. Today, if you're a Sabbath observant individual, can you have a career?
Yes.
Are you limited to any fields you want to go into?
No.
You want to be a doctor? There are Shomer Shabbos residencies. You want to be a lawyer? Plenty of Shomer Shabbos partners. You want whatever you want to do in life. It's an amazing time that we live in. No matter what you want to do in life, Shmir Shabbos.
Well, why isn't we being good Jews? Because it's easy. In a way, it makes it harder to be good Jews.
I don't know. I hear it. I just don't agree with it. I think other parts become harder. Maybe inspiration becomes harder. Maybe spirituality becomes harder. But if you look at religious practice, I don't want to say it's easy, but what's the Nisayon?
I agree it's easy, but I think that all these people who are there on that last level, if they would be looking at me today, they'd be like, that's exactly what we said.
I think you should think more of yourself. Chas v'shalom. Chas v'shalom. I think they would look at you and they would say, wow. Who would have thought that after 2,000 years, you're doing great, by the way, right? Right? Who would have thought that after 2,000 years, al admas nechar, that there are religious Jews Who would have thought of such? Okay, you want to say maybe we're deficient in certain areas? Okay, I'll be makabel that. Look, there's no question. 2,000 years of godless takes its toll on us. There's no question. But I think that if our ancestors who were sitting by Naros Babel came back and they saw this. They saw a college class of wonderful, promising young Jewish women who are going to go out into the world and do whatever they're going to do, but are pursuing a career and doing it b'kedusha b'tahara. I think their jaws would drop. I think their jaws would drop.
I hope so.
Because, yeah, I think so. Obviously, hopefully when Mashiach comes, we'll ask them. We'll ask them together. We'll see who's correct. Right? But I think I will agree with your point that there's no question. Kalis takes its toll. I'm sorry?
We're being very easy in ourselves.
I hear it. I would tell you, don't be so hard on us, right? I want to be clear. There's no question that 2,000 years of Galus has its impact. There's no question. But I think that if you look at where we are now, with all the imperfections and all the challenges and all the residual stuff that is a result, thank you, I was looking for that word, right, of 2,000 years of galus, I think it's astounding. I think this is the miracle of Am Yisrael. And it was a miracle that our ancestors, they in their mind, they couldn't even process it. They assumed that by definition, there is no ability to sing the song of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al Admas Nechar. They literally thought that it was the end of the road. And that's why they're crying together with the waters. Because if you think about this, ultimately, again, for the Mayim Tachtonim, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is what? It is the end of the road. Right? The Mayim Tachtonim, for the last 2,000 years, have been cut off. Okay, you could say maybe there's a halacha brought down in Shulchan Aruch that you're supposed to keep melach, you're supposed to keep salt on your table. Right? Why is there a din to keep salt on your table? Because the Shulchan is done with a Mizbeach, right? And the Mizbeach always has to have a kol karban chot hakriv melach. So there's a zecher. It's very beautiful, but I'm sure it's not the same. Yes?
What about using the water?
100%. So we use the waters. In other words, the waters have not lost their meaning, and they haven't lost a spiritual identity. But if you go back, why were the Mayim Tachtonim most upset? They're upset because they were disconnected from going up. It seems to be that what bothered them most is beforehand they had access to the Elyonim. The Rakia restricts their access to the Elyonim, their Tachtonim. There's no question. Mayim, a Jew can't live without water. Again, this is an incredibly important point. Again, remember, without mikvah, there's no Klal Yisrael. There's no family life. There's nothing. So water, of course, still plays an incredibly integral role for our ruchnius. But for the Mayim Tachtonim themselves, what they wanted, I guess, in addition to that, was access. That access to the celestial sphere is not existent without the Beis HaMikdash. Plenty of meaning, but no access. So everybody is sitting around and crying because they feel that they've reached the end of the road. But herein lies the distinction between man and water. Water reached the end of the road for now. Emir Tashem will have the Bayi Shlishi, Mehira B'Yameinu, and ultimately again, the waters, once again, the Mayim Tachtonim will once again be reconnected to the Mayim Elyonim. But man is dramatically different. Take a look at number 10. I'll show you something amazing. So the Pasuk says, Vayibarech Osam Elokim, back to Maaseh Bereishis. Vayomer Elokim, Peru Urevu, Umil'u Es Haaretz, V'kivshua, Uredu B'degas Hayom Ba'of Hashem Chol Chayaram Es Haaretz. This is actually quite amazing. So you're all familiar, of course, with this Pasuk. What does the Pasuk say? Hashem Baruch Hu tells man, Peru Urevu, right? Be fruitful, multiply, fill up the land. Kivshua means what? Kivshua? Capture it, conquer it, subdue it. Urdubi de Gasayam, which means what? Rule over the fish of the sea. Ubah Hashemayim, birds of the heavens. Ubechol chayar mes salaretz. And every animal that inhabits the face of the earth. So I want to show you something amazing. I think I mentioned this last class. When you look at the story of Maaseh Bereishis, you look at the Genesis narrative, the creation narrative. So remember we spoke about, I believe we spoke about, the story often follows a very simple pattern. What's the pattern? Kadosh Baruch Hu creates something. And in the initial stage of that creation, what does that thing look like? All over the place. Excellent. It's expansive. It's everywhere, right? The paradigmatic example of this was? Water. Everywhere. So Kadosh Baruch Hu creates, it's all over the place, and then what happens? What we call Tzimtzum. Right? Kadosh Baruch Hu contracts. He gathers. Expansive, gather. There's one exception to that, which is man. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes the creation of man, this is incredible. Where is man's influence to be felt? Everywhere. Obviously, we dwell on the earth. So we're going to populate the earth, right? We are earth dwellers. We live on land. But look where our influence is. Go ahead, kifshua. Conquer everything. What should you conquer? Conquer the birds. Conquer the animals. Conquer the fish. Sea, air, land, everywhere. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, let man's influence, which tells you something amazing. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to tell man was something dramatic, which is everything else in nature has a gvul, has a boundary, has limitations. Man, you have no limitations. Now, of course, again, you understand what I mean by that. Of course, we have limitations. Meaning, we have Torah, we have mitzvahs, we have averos, we have frameworks in which we live. But from a potentialistic perspective, there are no boundaries. Man, although he may walk on the earth, by definition has the ability to conquer the heavens, or at least the sky, right? Has the ability to conquer the depths, the sea, has the ability to exert his influence anywhere and everywhere. So now watch this. So if you take a look, so now we begin to understand, we're going to put this all together now. So now we have over here, this dramatically, so we have on one hand, Klal Yisrael sitting together with the waters, crying, because the waters think they've reached the end of the line. Klal Yisrael thinks, we've reached the end of the line. Ech nashir asher shama ad mas nechar. How could we sing anywhere? We're stuck on foreign soil. We've reached the end of the line. Well, now we go back to Bereishis. And let's talk a little bit about man's abilities. Where do man's abilities find their expression? And the answer is, wherever he wants. Human beings, man, the Jew, is never limited. Wherever we are, wherever we may be, whatever our circumstances, there is an incredible ability to self-actualize. No matter whether I'm on the earth, the heavens, the sea, Eretz Yisrael, outside of Eretz Yisrael, we always have the ability to become the best version of ourselves and ultimately self-actualize that potential which resides within. Watch this. Look at number 12 for just a moment. So remember again, what did the Shemaim say? Hashemaim is Saprim Kivot Kel, Umahase Yodav Magid Harakia. So remember again, on a basic level, what is the Shemaim saying? So remember again, I mentioned this outside last time, last class, the Rambam number 13, which is Hilchos Yisod Torah. I misquoted it. I think I said Hilchos Deos. But it's Hilchos Yisod Torah, where the Rambam writes again, that if a person wants to come to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how do you come to love Hashem according to the Rambam? The first step is what? Is what? Ultimately, look at nature. Look at nature. So on the most basic level, that's what the Shemaim is saying. Shemaim is saying, man, you want to see the greatness of God? You want to get a little glimpse into the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Look at me. Hashemaim misaprim kivot kel, umahase yodav magid harakia. Look at the Shemaim, look at the Rakia, and at the end of the day, you will see the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is true. Through this little creation, I say little because it's only one of many, many, many creations in the universe, but through this one creation, we get to see the incredible greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you take a look at number 14, the Yalkut Shimoni writes, Hashem Sabin Kivot Kel, Uma Seyadav Magid HaRakia, Hachikamar, we'll skip the Akut Shimoni right now. So again, on a basic level, remember again, let's tie this all together. Perek Shira teaches us that through creation we can see the greatness of God. So we would all agree that when you look at the Shimon, you look at the Rakia, you see the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You see the vastness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the Rambam. But there's something deeper that's unfolding over here. When you look at the Shamayim, So what's the message that you as a Jew hear? Look at Shem, the Shem talks to you, right? Nature is talking. And what does nature say? What does the Shem say to us? I am great, Shemayim says. I am great, but I am what I am. I am the Shemayim, I am the Rakia, I have limitations. But when the Jew looks at Shemayim, what is he reminded? He's reminded that Shemayim, as vast as you may be, and as great as you may be, the Shemayim itself has limitations. Right? What are the limitations of Shemayim? What are the limitations? Right? It's a divider. That's what it is. The Shemayim can't impact the sea. The Shemayim can't impact the land. The Shemayim is the Shemayim. And as great as it may be, I, a mere mortal, a regular Jew, am so much more powerful. Because Shemayim, you have but one identity. I have the ability to have a multifaceted identity. You can only operate Shemayim in one sphere, right? There's one area of the universe where the Shemayim exerts its influence. There's one area of the Shemayim where there's one area of the universe where the impact of the Shemayim could be felt. Where can my impact be felt? Where can my impact be felt? Where? Anywhere I choose to exert it. The Kivshua, Uridu B'degas Hayam, Uba Ofa Shemayim, B'chol Chayas Haaretz, Peru Urevu Umil Ues Arts. By the way, you know Peru Urevu Umil Ues Arts is not just a din on reproduction. Right? It's not just a din in having children. That's, of course, the mitzvah. But the Zohar says Peru Urevu Umil Ues Arts also means what? Fill the world with your influence. Reproduce. Give off into the world. What happens when a person is zocha to have a child? There's another little piece of them that fills the world. You fulfill the mitzvah period of Arivia every single day when you have an influence on the world around you. Peru urevu milu'as ha'aretz. Change the earth, change the sea, change the heavens. Exert your influence v'kiv shua. This is the incredible message. So shamayim misafrin kivot kel umasi adav magid raki. Absolutely. When you look at the heavens, you see the greatness of God. Because this one little creation shows you just a little insight, a little spark of the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I look at the heavens and I say, wow, heavens, Shemayim, you're incredible. You know what the heavens whispers back to me? We might be incredible, but you, man, you are even greater. Because we, the heavens, we are what we are. I'm the Rakia, I'm the Shemayim. I operate in my particular given sphere of influence. But I can't progress, I can't grow, I can't change. I simply am what I am. But you, man, you can be whatever you want. You can be whoever you want. You could transform yourself into the crown jewel of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creations, or you could debase yourself in the most animalistic ways. You can make yourself into something special, or you could just simply hide in the shadows of anonymity. You decide what you want to be. This is the message, ultimately, again, of the Shemayim, of the Rakia. Yes, I can see the greatness of God, and yes, I see the greatness of the Rakia, but as I see the greatness of the Rakia, I realize that I am even greater. And if we go back now 2,000 years, our ancestors made a mistake, I think. Our ancestors made a mistake because they cried together with the waters because the water said, "Oy vavoy, this is the end of the road." And our ancestors said, "Oy vavoy, it is the end of the road for us as well." Eich nashira shira shema ad mas nechar. And the whole time, the waters were correct. Our ancestors were wrong. Because kivshuha, we have the ability ultimately to dominate it, to make something of ourselves, no matter what our life circumstances may be, and no matter what our geographic circumstances may be. I'll share with you one last piece, and with this we'll end, going back to the Ruchnius idea. There's an incredible insight by the Piagetzna, Rav Klonimus Kamen Shapira of Piagetzna, right? The Piagetzna Rebbe. I'm sure, hopefully, you've heard of him, the Piagetzna. Right? So Piagetzna is most famous. Piagetzna was an incredible individual. He was he was a child prodigy and became a very well-renowned and highly regarded Rebbe at a young age. he suffers a series of different tragedies. His wife died before the war. He lost a son and a daughter-in-law during the German bombardment of Poland, September 1st, 1939. Actually, his wife and his daughter and son-in-law are buried in the cemetery in Warsaw. The Piazetsna himself, again, he had another daughter, Rachel, who he didn't know what happened to her, but she was murdered on the way, I think, in Treblinka, or on the way to Treblinka, and the Piazetsna himself dies, also being transported out of the Warsaw ghetto. In the ghetto itself, so the Piazetsna was an incredible beacon of hope for so many. Every Shabbos he would give a drasha, and after Shabbos, it's a historical debate whether it was the Piazetsna himself or his gabbai who wrote down the drushas after Shabbos. Not clear who exactly wrote them. Somebody wrote them down, and towards the end, and it was clear the ghetto was going to be liquidated, they hid them in a milk canister. After the war, the milk canister was discovered by a Polish peasant, sent to Tarasov, the Piazetsna had a cousin, sent there, and it was published under the title of Ish Kodesh, Holy Fire. So the Piazetsna has an incredible piece from Parshas Yisro, in the year Tafshin, which was 1939, the beginning again of their time in the ghetto. So the Piazetsna writes, he asked a fundamental question. He says, why was the Torah given in the middle of nowhere? Right? He asks a very good question, which is, think about this in just a moment. Right? If you were choosing the site for Kabbalah Satorah, where would you have staged it?
Yerushalayim.
Where? Harabayis. That would have been the most natural site for Kabbalah HaTorah. The site of the Akedah, the future site of the Beis HaMikdash, according to many, the site of Yaakov Avinu's dream. Right? That is the place. That is the place. Yerda Kadosh Baruch Hu gives it where? On Har Sinai, in the middle of Sinai. Where's Har Sinai?
Midbar.
Where now? Where's Har Sinai today? It doesn't seem to be clear exactly where Har Sinai. We know the general geographic area. Isn't it interesting that the site of the greatest revelation that ever occurred in mankind's history, is some obscure, we don't know. We don't know where it is. And by the way, even if you did know where it is, let's say you were able to find Har Sinai, right? Is there Kiddusha attached to the place?
No.
None. Right? Which means you want to go picnic and play frisbee on Har Sinai? Go right ahead. No problem. Want to walk your dog on Har Sinai? Go right ahead. So strange. The site of the greatest revelation, the site where HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to mankind, spoke to a nation, never happened again. Never happened again since that. We don't know the place. So the Piazetsna says something so beautiful. He says, I'm going to give you the shortened version, but he explains so beautifully. It's to teach us the following concept. He says, Shelo yelipcha chalak ala makam. You see, had you known, had Torah been given in Eretz Yisrael, you would have thought that what? That spirituality is tethered to the land. That in order to be Ruchni, you have to be in Eretz Yisrael. It's where Torah was given. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, there's no Ruchnius. So where does HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us the Torah? Where does he give us the Torah? Where? Where? In the middle of nowhere. Mamish, the middle of nowhere, the middle of the Midbar. To teach us an incredibly profound lesson. That you can have Ruchnius wherever you go. You can have Ruchnius wherever you are. You can have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no matter where you are. Is Eretz Yisrael special? Of course Eretz Yisrael is special. Can you feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Eretz Yisrael in a way that you can't feel Him in Chutz La'aretz? Of course. Is there a unique connection there that doesn't exist anywhere else? 1,000%. But lest you think that Ruchnius can only be found in Eretz Yisrael, nothing further from the truth. V'haraya, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the Torah in the middle of Nerb. Levi Yitzchak Berdichev says the same idea, where before Klal Yisrael goes into the desert, what does the Pasuk, before they go into Eretz Yisrael, so in the beginning of Chumash Devarim, Pasuk says that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah on a series of stones, Be'er Heitev. What does Be'er Heitev mean? What does Rashi say? B'shivim Lashon, 70 languages. What's the obvious question? Who needs 70 languages? Klal Yisrael speak what? What do they speak? And of course Yiddish, right? Everybody speaks Yiddish, right? They speak Lashon HaKodesh, or some form of Lashon HaKodesh, right? That's what they speak. That's what they speak. What are these 70 languages? I believe Yitzchak Berdichev says so beautifully, because Moshe Rabbeinu was giving them a message. As you go into Eretz Yisrael, don't think for a moment that your spirituality is wholly dependent on being here. B'shivim Lashon. wherever you go, there is that ability for Ruchnius. And that's what the Shamayim is teaching us. The rest of nature is confined to its particular areas. The rest of nature exists within a limited framework. The Mayim Tachtonim are crying because they are cut off, because without the vehicle of a Beis HaMikdash, there is no way for them to ascend up. But as we look up at the shrine, the vastness of the heavens, and we see the greatness of the heavens, and we are astounded by how vast they are. And remember, when we started this, we look up at the heavens, often we feel so little and so small. Fakert, it's just the opposite. It's just the opposite. When we look at the heavens and we see how vast they are and how great they are, we see ourselves, you know what? You are great, but you're limited to a particular construct, to a particular framework, to a particular place in the universe. Man, we're given the mandate of kivshuha. We could be whatever we want, wherever we want, however we want. From the greatness of the heavens, we learn the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But more importantly, for our purposes now, we learn of our own greatness as well. Nature is great, but limited. Man is great, and ultimately, unlimited. All right, let's stop over here for today. Rest and we'll continue on Wednesday.